Sahana vavatu, sahanau bhunaktu, saha viryankaravavahai, tejasvinavadhitamastama vidvishavahai. Om Shanti Shanti Shanti. Om Jaya Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Shri Vasari Gaura Bhakta Brinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama, Hare Rama, 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 Hare Hare.
Okay, page 6, Adhyaya Prakashika. This chapter describes how Sudumna became a woman and how the dynasty of Vaivasvata Manu was amalgamated with the Soma Vamsa, the dynasty coming from the moon. By the desire of Maharaj Pariksit, Sukadev Goswami told about the dynasty of Vaivasvata Manu, who was formerly King Satyavrata, the ruler of Dravida. While describing this dynasty, he also described how the Supreme Personality of Godhead, while lying down in the waters of devastation, gave birth to Lord Brahma from a lotus generated from his navel. From the mind of Lord Brahma, Marichi was generated, and this son, and his son was Kasyapa. From Kasyapa through Aditi, Vivasvan was generated, and from Vivasvan came Shraddhadeva Manu, who was born from the womb of Samgya. Shraddhadeva's wife, Shraddha, gave birth to 10 sons, such as Ikshvaku and Mriga. Shraddhadeva, or Vaivasvata Manu, the father of Maharaj Ikshvaku, was sonless before Ikshvaku's birth. But by the grace of the great sage Vasishtha, he performed a yajna to satisfy Mitra and Varuna. Then, although Vaivasvata Manu wanted a son by the desire of his wife, he got a daughter named Ila. Manu, however, was not satisfied with the daughter. Consequently, for Manu's satisfaction, the great sage Vasishtha prayed for Ila to be transformed into a boy. And his prayer was fulfilled by the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Thus, Ila became a beautiful young man named Sudyumna. Okay. It just keeps going back and forth. Once upon a time, Sudyumna went on tour with his ministers. At the foot of the mountain Sumeru, there is a forest named Sukumara. And as soon as they entered that forest, they were all transformed into women. When Maharaj Pariksit inquired from Sukadev Goswami about the reason for this transformation, Sukadev Goswami described how Sudyumna, being transformed into a woman, accepted Buddha, the son of the moon, as her husband, and had a son named Pururava. Pururava. By the grace of Lord Shiva, Sudyumna received the benedictions that he would live 1 month as a woman and 1 month as a man. Thus he regained his kingdom and had 3 sons named Utkala, Gaya, and Vimala, who were all very religious. Thereafter, he entrusted his kingdom to Pururava and took the order of Vanaprastha life. Shloka Anusharanam. Verses 1 to 6. Request by King Pariksit. 7 to 12. Order of creation. 13 to 22. Manu dissatisfied at the birth of a girl named Ila. 23 to 36. Sudumna enters a forest and transformed into a female. 37 to 42, Sudumna accepts Vanaprastha. Verses 1 to 6, request by King Pariksit. King Pariksit said, O my Lord, Sukadev Goswami, you have elaborately described all the periods of the various Manus, and within those periods, the wonderful activities of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who has unlimited potency. I am fortunate to have heard all of this from you. Satyavrata, the saintly king of Dravida Desh, who received spiritual knowledge at the end of the last millennium by the grace of the Supreme, later became Vaivasvata Manu, the son of Vivasvan. In the next Manvantara period of Manu, I have received this knowledge from you. Oh, from Nekshmanvita, I have received this knowledge from you. I also understand that such kings as Ikshvaku were his sons, as you have already explained. O greatly fortunate Sukadeva Goswami, O great Brahmana, kindly describe to us separately the dynasties and characteristics of all those kings, for you are always eager to hear such topics from you. Kindly tell us about the abilities of all the celebrated kings born in the dynasty of Vaivasvatamana, including those who have already passed, those who may appear in the future, and those who exist at present. Right, so we've had the creation has come up a few times. Right, the second canto we're dealing, third canto, I think fourth canto, fifth canto, means it comes up many times, the primary and secondary creation. And then Manu's from what, fourth canto? Do you remember? Like somewhere from there, Manus have been going. So now we've gone through all the Manus. And so now then the topic turns to the kings of the Sun and Moon Dynasty. You know, so with that, that will finish the general categories of Puranic topics. Right? So that will then go through here. That will take Krishna. And that, and then after that, then we'll go into, you know, your general, how you say, philosophy. You know, as a conclusion of the Bhagavatam.
Mm-hmm. Satyavrata, he became next Manu? When he was there?
Because he was Satyavrata in that time. Because that was not fully through a Manvantara. Remember? In the Chakshusha Manu, it wasn't the end of the Chakshusha Manu's reign, it was in between. Mm-hmm. And so then he was Satyavrata. So he was then saved in that devastation and given instruction by the Lord. Then in his next life, he took birth as the son of Manu, of Vivasvan, so he became the next Manu, the eighth, right? Means there's a seventh. Vivasvata is seventh. Yes, seventh Manu. So in the sixth, in Chakshusha, that's when then he, yeah.
Regarding the Panchalakshana that he spoke about, Puranas and the Mahapuranas is common, the Panchalakshana.
Yes.
What is the distinct characteristics of the Mahapuran?
Didn't we just go through that yesterday? Just some of them we remembered, but we went through that. Means you have those, then on top of that, then you have how Krishna's maintaining the universe and how he's nourishing the universe. Then the sumram bonum, how the ultimate goal is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Like that. That's three, and then there'll be...
Vitrasura.
No, but that's a story. But this is a topic.
It's four extra.
Huh?
Four extra we have. Ultimate goal, maintenance, nourishment, and the summum bonum of the Maharaj.
The summum bonum and ultimate goal is the same.
So three extra we have.
Yes, but I'm just saying the other two I don't remember now. But it was also brought up, that'll come up. That's the topic in 12th canto.
Thank you.
Okay. Śrīla Goswāmī said, when Sukadeva Goswāmī, the greatest knower of religious principles, was thus requested by Maharaj Parīkṣit in the assembly of all the scholars, learned in Vedic knowledge, he then proceeded to speak. Verses 7 to 12, the order of creation. Sukadeva Goswāmī continued, O King, subduer of your enemies, now hear from me in great detail about the dynasty of Manu. I shall explain as much as possible, although one could not say everything about it. Even in hundreds of years, the transcendental supreme person, the supersoul of all living entities, who are in different statuses of life, high and low, existed at the end of the millennium, when neither this manifested cosmos nor anything else but him existed. O King Parīkṣit, from the navel of the Supreme Personality of Godhead was generated a golden lotus, and on which the four-faced Lord Brahma took his birth. From the mind of Lord Brahma, Marichi took birth, and from the semen of Marichi, Kasyapa appeared from the womb of the daughter of Daksha Maharaj. From Kasyapa, by the womb of Aditi, Vibhisvan took birth. O King, best of the Bar dynasty, from Vibhisvan, by the womb of Sangya, Shradadeva Manu was born. Shradadeva Manu, having conquered his senses, begot 10 sons in the womb of his wife, Shraddha. The names of these sons were Ikshvaku, Nriga, Saryati, Dishta, Drishta, Karushaka, Nari Shyana, Shyanta, Prishadra, Nabhaga, and Kavi. His Kavi comes up, no? 11th canto. Kavi, yeah, that's right. Kavi, yeah, Kavi, okay. And I think there's also some stories about Nabhaga.
We had Nabhaga and Nabhaga.
Hmm?
There were two brothers.
Nabhaga. Was it Na or Na? No, Na did it. Verses 13 to 22. Right. So when we start a conversation, we see a topic. You see, it always goes back, connects to the Lord, and then comes down from there. That's the Vedic. You know, that's the what they're in the formal presentation. It's always like that. That's just standard. One may say, "Oh, but it's already been described before." But just so that it's clear exactly the connection. Right. So here we're giving the lineage about in the line of kings, because that was the discussion. So how they go back. So, but any topic like that in the Vedic literature starts like that. That's just the standard. Verses 13 to 22. Manu dissatisfied at the birth of a girl child named Ila. Sukadeva Goswami continued, Manu at first had no sons. Therefore, in order to get a son for him, the great Saint Vasishta, who is very powerful in spiritual knowledge, performed a sacrifice to satisfy the demigods, Mitra and Varuna. During that sacrifice, Shraddha, Manu's wife, who was observing the vow of subsisting only on drinking milk, approached the priest offering the sacrifice, offered obeisances to him, and begged for a daughter. Told by the chief priest, now offer oblations, the person in charge of oblations took clarified butter to offer. He then remembered the request of Manu's wife and performed the sacrifice while chanting the word Vashat. Manu had begun that sacrifice for the sake of getting a son. But because the priest was diverted by the request of Manu's wife, a daughter named Ila was born. Upon seeing the daughter, Manu was not very satisfied. Footnote 1. Srila Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur explains. It should be understood that the king was joyful at her birth and therefore gave her a name, but his joy was just ordinary since the problem of having no son was not removed. That is indicated by the words na ati tush tam nama, not too satisfied. Right, so means he's happy to have a daughter, but because being the king, then a son will take over the kingdom, so he wants a son. So that has not been satisfied, that desire. So that's why it says not so satisfied. His daughter having the relationship, that's fine. We understand it's different from kind of more contemporary scenario.
What about his wife? She didn't know the whole reason he wanted son.
I have no idea why they did this. Does it depend upon logic? She's like this. Boys, you dress them up, and then after 5 minutes, they look like a mess. Girls, you can dress them up. They look all nice. You can do so many different things.
Okay, you don't need the sacrifice for that.
But they weren't having any children by the looks of it.
And then they had 10.
Yeah, that's after. That's why it's the time factor. You know. So if you just perform your duties, you wait, then everything works out.
And this girl, she's not in Sudyumna. They're not mentioned there. In 10 sons.
In the?
Previously, there was a list of 10 sons. That's his, Shraddhadeva, isn't it?
Yes.
And he was not mentioned there, or she was not mentioned.
Because she was born as a daughter, so. And then ended
not
up as
mentioned.
And ended up as a daughter, so. Okay. Thus he spoke to his guru, Vasishta. As follows, my lord, all of you are expert in chanting the Vedic mantras. How then has the result been opposite to the one desired? This is a matter for lamentation. There should not have been a reversal of the results of the Vedic mantras. Srila Prabhupada comments to verse 17. In this age, the performance of yajna has been forbidden because no one can properly chant the Vedic mantras. It means all these shrauta yajnas, like that. It means your things connected with the deities and that we use. Because those are about devotion and satisfaction of the Lord. But the Shrauta Yajnas and Samskars are also done because they're for purification. But the Shrauta Yajna is there for a specific purpose that you want on the material platform. And so, unless the mantras are exact, you won't get the results. So therefore, since people can't chant that well, then what will happen is so much time will be wasted, money will be wasted, people will be disappointed, who knows what kind of cheating goes on and everything like this and that, because they have to maintain, you know. So, yeah. So it's just, they're just forbidden in this age.
Shruti yagis means karmakanda?
Shruti, yeah, means those are the big yagis, like Ashwamedha, you know, all these different ones. Yeah, because all these things then people have to be doing for generations and all that. You know, it's like, I think in to do a Soma Yajna, all the priests have to have been in three Yajnas before that. So that's a problem. That means then you have your main priests, they have all the assistants, and so they had to have been in there, and then like this, and then they're able to take part. Does that make sense? So the problem is now, I think the last one, or at least the head priest or something, the last one who had that qualification, then they did a yajna like that in Kerala about 1980s, so he's probably dead now. So that means technically, according to the rule, you can't do them. You know, so that's why in this age you just don't even bother. Okay.
Is this fall in the category of kamya?
Yes, this is kamya. Because it's not that you have to do it as an ashrameda is not a nitya or nainmitic. It's not like something that is regularly done. It's something that you're doing for specific desire. So then. If Vedic mantras are chanted properly, the desire for which a sacrifice is performed must be successful. Therefore, the Hare Krishna chant is called the Mahamantra, the great exalted mantra above all other Vedic mantras, because simply chanting the Hare Krishna Mahamantra brings so many beneficial effects, as explained by Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, Shikshastaka 1. Glory to the Sri Krishna Sankirtana, which cleanses the heart of all the dust accumulated for years and extinguishes the fire of conditional life, of repeated birth and death. This Sankirtan movement is the prime benediction for humanity at large, because it spreads the rays of the benediction moon. It is the life of all transcendental knowledge. It increases the ocean of transcendental bliss, and it enables us to fully taste the nectar for which we are always anxious. Therefore, the best performance of yajna given to us is the Sankirtana yajna. Yajyai Sankirtana Prayer Yajanti Hi Sumedha Sahar. Srimad Bhagavatam 11.5.32. Those who are intelligent take advantage of the greatest yajna in this age by chanting the Hare Krishna Mahamantra in congregation. Mm-hmm. Yes?
Can we say that in previous ages people would take to those big yajnas for material pious results and for Sankirtan yajna only for spiritual, while we take to Sankirtan as no other choice anyway?
Yes. Like that. Because they had the specific, because they could perform the action and all that, they could do it properly, and so then it would work. It's just like, let's say you want to do something, then you have to follow the skill properly, then it'll work. Mm. You know, it's just like, let's say, I buy something for 10 rupees and I sell it for 8. Will I make profit? Mm. No. So that's the whole point, is so since it's dependent upon the chanting, they can't do. So in these ages, they could do these things because they had the skills. And so it's just natural then one would do like this. But we can see is that, but the essence is, since it's dependent upon the Lord, you're trying to please the Lord through sacrifice. Therefore, the best of all yajna is Sankirtana. So then by doing that, you please the Lord, and then everything on all levels can be fulfilled. When the Hare Krishna Mahamantra is chanted by many men together, the chanting is called Sankirtana. And as a result of such a yajna, there will be clouds in the sky. Yajyat bhavati parjanya. Bhagavad Gita 3.14. In these days of drought, people can gain relief from scarcity of rain and flood by the simple method of the Hare Krishna yajna. Indeed, this can relieve all of human society. I think when Prabhupada was here, then they had, they, in Hyderabad, they were having a drought, right? And then they had a big Sankirtan. They got everybody, and I guess all the members, and you know, all the pious Hindus, and they all did Sankirtan, and then it would rain. So I think the people got more faith in Sankirtan at that point. At present, there are droughts throughout Europe and America, and people are suffering. But if people take this Krishna conscious movement seriously, they stop their sinful activities and chant the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra, all their problems will be solved without difficulty. In other processes of yajna, there are difficulties because there are no learned scholars who can chant the mantras perfectly well. Nor is it possible to secure the ingredients to perform the yajna. Because human society is poverty stricken and men are devoid of Vedic knowledge and the power to chant the Vedic mantras, the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra is the only shelter. People should be intelligent enough to chant it. Yajyai Sankirtana Prayer Yajanti Hi Sumedha Saha. Srimad Bhagavatam 11.5.32. Those whose brains are dull cannot understand this chanting, nor can they take to it. Yeah, so it's not a matter of presentation. It's a matter of just dullness. Right? Does that make sense? You know, it's like... Yeah. Manu continued, "You are all self-controlled, well-balanced in mind, and aware of the absolute truth. And because of austerities and penances, you are completely cleansed of all material contamination. Your words, like those of the demigods, are never baffled. Then how is it possible that your determination has failed?" Srila Prabhupada explains, "A benediction or curse given by the demigods never proves false. By performing austerities and penances, by controlling the senses and mind, and by achieving full knowledge of the absolute truth, one is fully cleansed of material contamination." Then one's words and blessings, like those of the demigods, are never a failure. Okay. So you're performing your duties and the difficulties that come with that, controlling the senses and mind, so it's focused on the higher principles and achieving full knowledge of the absolute truth. So when everything is connected to Krishna, right? So your duties are all for Krishna, the difficulties that come with that. The focus, the mind is always pulled back from wherever it is to Krishna, right? And then we're focused on knowledge about Krishna. We do everything according to that. Then whatever one says, that will always work. The most powerful great-grandfather, Vasishta, after hearing these words of Manu...
When we say that the person's words are always truthful, do we say that the person says whatever Krishna's plan, or his own desire may just come fulfilled because he's a devotee of Krishna?
But the point is on what basis would he say something?
On the basis to please.
Please Krishna. So therefore then it works.
To his own. He's just taking part in it.
It's being said about... It's being said in context of Krishna, because right here it was saying... achieving full knowledge of the absolute truth, right? Then controlling the senses and mind, and then performing austerities and penances. So we see is that they're steady in this. So they're fixed in devotional service, fixed in it, focusing on Krishna and devotional service, and they're comfortable performing all the activities that go along with that devotional service. Does that make sense? So then, since it's about Krishna, then what's the problem? You understand? You always have to catch it's about Krishna. We get too caught up in that secondary aspect. It means the secondary is important because of recommendation, so we don't just, it doesn't matter and do anything we like based on the mind, so then the mind's not controlled. Right? But what it means is that things that are in line with Krishna, Krishna supports. Just like Sukracharya, he did yajnas for Bali Maharaj, and because Bali Maharaj was respecting the Brahmins properly, he was able to take over the heavenly planets. But because it had been the benediction of a Brahmana, Krishna didn't get in the way of that. Right? So if a Brahmana is saying all these things, then why it won't work? And let alone if they are a devotee. Is that so? Like that. We have to be able to get beyond the thing that we're individuals and we have our understandings, and we can function within those, and it's connected to Krishna, though they may be different and all that, it works. Rather than it's just, oh, Krishna, and it just comes down, and actually the guru is not about him as a person, it's just he's only the via media and this and that kind of thing, that we remove the personal aspect. Because that makes it comfortable for us, because that means I'm dealing in a platform of respect, but actually I don't have to respect the person. It's just the mechanics of the ritual. Right? So therefore etiquette I'm following, but actually I don't have to, because he's just a schmutz. It's because, you know, this is what Krishna said and he's given me that. So it's actually Krishna's words that are powerful, but he's not. You understand? We have to be able to go beyond that kind of a platform to understand is, no, we're individuals, and individuals being fixed in Krishna consciousness, that's appreciated by Krishna. Therefore, it works. Is that, yeah?
So the chit potency comes through
that. Yes, the chit potency is there. The most powerful great-grandfather Vasishtha, after hearing these words of Manu, understood the discrepancy on the part of the priest. Thus he spoke as follows to the son of the sun god Vasishtha. Sun god, Vasishtha said, this discrepancy in the objective is due to your priest's deviation from the original purpose. However, by my own prowess, I shall give you a good son. Sukadeva Goswami continued, O King Parikit, after the most famous and powerful Vasishtha made this decision, he offered prayers to the Supreme Person, Vishnu, to transform Ila into a male. The Supreme Personality of Godhead, the Supreme Controller, being pleased with Vasishtha, gave him the benediction he desired. Thus, Ila was transformed into a very fine male named Sudyumna. Verses 23 to 36. Sudyumna enters a forest and transforms into a female. No. Sukadeva means he was supposed to be a girl. Sukadeva Goswami continued, O King Parikit, that hero Sudyumna, accompanied by a few ministers and associates and riding on a horse brought from Sindhu Pradesh, once went into the forest to hunt, because I think the horses from Sindh are considered the good horse. The ones that are the Arabian horses, those are the ones that are from there. But I guess because at some point that comes under the control of Persia, so they have horses over there, so now they become, you know, Persian horses or whatever, when actually originally they were Indian horses. Like that. Once went into the forest to hunt. He wore armor and was decorated with bows and arrows, and he was very beautiful. While following the animals and killing them, he reached the northern part of the forest. There in the north, at the bottom of Mount Meru, is a forest known as Sukumara, where Lord Shiva always enjoys with Uma. So the base of Mount Meru, that means he has to be going above Bharat Varsha,
yes.
Right? Into the next Varsha. Yeah, into Ilavritta and then right up to Meru.
So, yeah, Meru is in Ilavritta.
So. Oh, it's Ilavritta, but between Ilavritta and Bharat, there's one.
Skip through two more, actually.
Huh? Kimpurusha. Yeah, so he had to go all the way through there. So that means he's very qualified to be able to move around Jambudweep as he pleases.
Is that the reason why it is named as Ilavrata Varsha? Because Ila...
That I'm not sure if it was about Ila, but... That's the reason, because of this. Oh, okay.
After this happened, his name became Ila.
Oh, before it had a different name.
Can we say that only in Kali Yuga people are not qualified to roam about all those varshas?
You could say yes, because in general everybody can't move around, but before it's not that everybody could, some people could. That's why, like when Arjuna went and he took, in other words, Arjuna took tax all the way up to the northern Kurus. That means the whole Jambudweep. So Duryodhana was, you know, very jealous of that, because he couldn't do that. Mm-hmm. So it's not even at that point that everybody could, but there were those who could. And now it's basically that nobody can.
Maharaj, even like when Shukdev Goswami was supposed to recite Bhagavatam for Parikshit Maharaj, he came walking from Kimpurusha Varsha.
Oh, okay. Yeah, because that's previous, so they could do all these things.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. One more question about Ila. His wife, Manu's wife, she wanted a daughter. She got a daughter, and then he transformed her into men again.
Mm-hmm.
Usually we see that great kings, they work in consideration of their wives.
Yes, and also wives work in consideration of husbands. Because in here, then what it is, it's more of it is an aspect of ashram, but there's the consideration of varna. So then here is that, you know, you have the son for being the king.
Mm-hmm.
So then that's a different area that generally one doesn't control, right? That results from that, yes, but you know what I'm saying. So there, so then in that case, because it's the first child, then the idea should be a son. Then after that, if they have a daughter, that's another thing.
Mm-hmm.
Like that. Because otherwise, then how do the things go on? You know, of course, it's not going to go on anyway, but... Sudumna entered that forest. O King Parikit, as soon as Sudumna, who was expert in subduing enemies, entered the forest, he saw himself transformed into a female, and his horse transformed into a mare. When his followers also saw their identities transformed and their sex reversed, they were all very morose and just looked at one another.
You were wearing hideous clothing.
Yeah, like that. Yeah. Yeah. Maharaj Parikit said, O most powerful Brahmana, why was this place so empowered, and who made it so powerful? Kindly answer this question, for I am eager to hear about this. Sukadeva Goswami answered, great saintly persons who strictly observed the spiritual codes and regulations and whose own effulgence dissipated all the darkness of all directions once came to see Lord Shiva in that forest. When the goddess Ambika saw the great saintly persons, she was very much ashamed because at that time she was naked. She immediately got up from the lap of her husband and tried to cover her breast. Seeing Lord Shiva and Parvati engaged in sexual affairs, all the great saintly persons immediately desisted from going further and departed for the ashram of Naranarayana. Thereupon, just to please his wife, Lord Shiva said, any male entering this place shall immediately become a female. Sukadeva Goswami continued, since that time no male had entered that forest, but now King Sudyumna, having been transformed into a female, began to walk with his associates from one forest to another. Srila Prabhupada comments in verse 33. In Bhagavad Gita 2:22, it is said, Vasamchi jinani yata vihaya. As a person puts on new garments, giving up old ones, the soul accepts new material bodies, giving up the old and useless ones. The body is just like a dress, and here this is proven. Sudyumna's associates were all male, which means that their souls were covered by male dress. But now they became female, which means that their dress was changed. The soul, however, remains the same. So it's not that their personality, everything changed. They were the same person. They just, the dress, the body changed. Right? So because otherwise, if they had changed everything completely, then there would have been a bunch of girls riding around in it with armor and that on cool horses. They would have just thought, wow, this is fun, right? But it was just, they had the same mentality. So that's the whole point. The soul is the same, the body keeps changing. Right? But because the soul identifies with the body, therefore then this continuity of consciousness is lost.
Does it create some psychological issues for them?
This is why it's in ninth canto, because by now it's hoping that we can handle these things.
I'm talking about them.
Yeah. Yes, it will create some problem.
Mark?
Yes.
Nowadays, in Kali Yuga, there's similar scenarios where people are like really confused about their identity on the material. Physical or even subtle platform, and they sometimes keep on changing their minds. So what's their scope for taking to Krishna consciousness in a serious way.
The point is this, the soul can always take it up in a serious way, but in doing that, one has to give up that mentality that they're going to be the controller and enjoyer in whatever form that they're going to be content with. Right? So the idea is that whatever one's position, then taking that, what are the rules for that position, follow that. And then go forward. Right? They decide they want to be male or female, that's fine, but follow the rules for that. And that the point is be Krishna conscious. So the senses have to be controlled. So we're not saying is no, they can go on being crazy. No, they have to become Krishna conscious. The reason is it's hard for them to be Krishna conscious because they'd rather be crazy.
So they need a separate place because they're not fit for ashram life? For the most part?
Oh, it depends upon how far they've taken the whole thing. But yes, it would be easier for them if they weren't. And nowadays that's easy because most places don't have ashrams. The only ones that permanently live in the temple are the deities. Right? you would have to just see as how, you know, well they're situated, like that. You know, what's the mentality and all that. But generally they would be more comfortable being in the community. But the point is then they fix and they follow those duties. You know, then it works. Is that... Like in, what do you call it? I was in one temple having the kirtan and this... it was one of the, you know, really fired up kirtan, all the brahmacharis are there, and then at one point this girl comes in with mridanga and really going for it and right in there with the boys and everything like that. And afterwards I ask about, you know, who's the girl? Everybody cracked up. Because that girl used to be a brahmachari in that temple. And so, yeah, so they just all thought it was funny. But as long as they follow the etiquette, and that, then, you know, it's cool. But they didn't live in the temple.
Yeah. That seems to be your main action.
Yes. So the point is we can deal with it, but there's, like you were saying, generally then they would function in that own environment, but then they're careful about all these things. And like in India, the hijras, they've always been there. So this whole thing of not knowing whether you're this or that, that's not a new thing. You know, in the West, it's a new and cutting edge. In India, that's been there forever. Like that. Like when Lord Prabhupada was talking about a drama about Lord Chaitanya, then at his birth, and he mentioned about how the hijras would come and dance, because that's considered part of the scene. They come, dance, and it's auspicious. You know, then you give them some charity, feed them, this and that, they go. They give blessings. So these things, but they have their own scene in that, and they respect the sadhus and everything like that. Generally speaking, they don't beg from the sadhus or anything like that. They're very careful about sadhus, right? Everybody else they'll harass, but the sadhus, they won't bother. So it's part of the scene. We don't have a problem with it. It's when we try to make it into an issue, make it a social topic, then that's where it becomes difficult, because we're not actually using the spiritual intelligence.
It was funny, I was in Mumbai on Marine Drive and a whole pack of them came along and they were harassing like everybody.
Yes.
But they saw me, so they took a book, gave a donation, and to everybody else they give blessing, no? And they say, yeah, money and success and this and that. And they took the book, gave me the money, and then they said, only Krishna Bhakti, only Krishna Bhakti, only Krishna Bhakti. And then they laughed and ran off.
Yeah.
They know it's like...
Yeah. So that's the thing, is that it fits in, then it works. It means, in other words, it has to be adjusted with Krishna consciousness. So it's their occupation, but at the same time is the consideration the spiritual still maintains. That's the whole thing. But we take it that whatever we feel, and that's the most important thing in the universe, and so he feels like it, or she feels like it, or it feels like it, or whatever it is, then that takes prominence over everything. You know, that's like the Trump, you know, the Joker. You pull out the Joker, you know, everybody, ooh, you know, like that. So The only problem is they'll end up with maybe end with a baseball bat in the back of the head, you know, like that, I think. So the difficulty comes up is that we're not looking at it from the spiritual platform, the soul, what are duties and this and that, what the Shastra says. It's always we feel, so that becomes the main thing. That's the basic difficulty. Prabhupada talks about it all the time, the mental speculators and all that. But somehow or another, in trying to, for some who have difficulty dealing with the difference between our lifestyle and the other's lifestyle, then tries to bridge it by the secondary forms of the lifestyle as opposed by the principal point of Krishna consciousness and the soul. And because of that, then it just creates trouble. Because it will never satisfy anybody and never get it, because you're not satisfying Krishna, so. So, yeah. Yes?
Maharaj, so this situation happens because the subtle body doesn't match the physical body, or it's just the fashion, or why does it happen?
Probably. But I can't say, but it's just, basically what's happening is the desire for sense gratification is so prominent in the living entity. It means they're unable to balance it within the context of what's around them. So therefore, then whatever is of interest, then that becomes, how you say, the forefront. Rather than I have duties, I have these, and then adjust to these things. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
So that's the... Because, because the point is you have the masculine and feminine principle. To combine those, then there's a lot of thought and effort has to go in to make it coordinated work nicely, because you're working with two different mentalities. Right?
Yeah.
He's technically two different species, but compatible. Right? So then, but then, that's a lot of effort for if the goal is sense gratification. Right? Now, it's much simpler on one level, it's simply about sense gratification. You simplify the thing, work with the same species. Or you switch the species, whichever is, it works. You understand? Because then, you're not having to work with an unknown trippiness. You're working with a known trippiness. It's just as trippy, but it's a known trippiness. So that's why when Prabhupada talks about, what is it, with Lord Brahma? Madhu and Kaitu. Yeah, like that. That for those who are focused on practicing and very absorbed in sense gratification, then for them becoming Krishna conscious just won't happen. Because they're so absorbed in sense gratification that Krishna conscious won't mean anything to them. So that was Prabhupada's point that was made before. So that's why we said with him is that then we have to move to the position where the interest is in Krishna consciousness, so then we'll want to control the senses. Then however you want to situate yourself, that's all right. As one, how you say, as one person from this, what would you call? What is it? LBGT?
GT.
Yeah, community said. He says, it doesn't matter what you are, if you're celibate, then, you know, what's the problem? Because then you're engaged in Krishna consciousness, you're celibate, what's the difficulty?
Why would you be in that community?
That's the mentality, but that you're controlling the senses. Because everybody has to control the senses. Does that work? So we don't have a problem working with all these different individuals, but the point is Krishna consciousness has to be the prominent. Otherwise, if it's not, how much they can handle, that's all the more than they'll be involved. Because they want to get more involved, then they have to be more more Krishna conscious. You know, and then the etiquettes go along with it. Right? So in their own area, they want to behave how they want, fine. But within Krishna conscious, there's etiquette. So they would have to follow that etiquette. Yes.
But in social dealings, it still becomes difficult because the guys are not comfortable with that person and the girls are also not comfortable with that person because it's both in one.
Yes, so that's the whole point, is then understanding that, then by etiquette, then they have to behave in such a way that people are less uncomfortable. And if it's all, no, but it's my right, then it's kind of like, who said it's anybody's right to be in anybody's face? So if it's your right, so then why isn't it the right of the rednecks that they can go out there with their shotguns and kick the guys around the block? They love to do that. I mean, that's, you know, how you say Saturday night fun, right? You know, a few beers and, hey, get in your muscle truck and go out and find some people from these communities. So they're just doing what they feel like. They're just, why are you restricting them? Why are you saying they can't do this? This is really, really means something to them. So why is it the other? That's the whole problem, is this, we talk about non-biased, but it's totally biased. Jiva Goswami gave a very, very nice thing yesterday that I was really impressed with, is that when he's talking about Krishna's equality. So then it'll be said, no, but he's giving special favor to the devotees and not to the non-devotees. So then by the modern thing, nobody should get any special favor, or everybody should get special favor. So then he points out that that's biased, because someone hasn't done anything to serve Krishna, and they're getting the same treatment as someone who has. So you're biased towards the person who's not serving Krishna, and biased against the person who is. So all it is the modern political thing. They just switch the bias. Right? It means the conservatives are biased against liberals, and then liberals are biased against conservatives. But somehow or another, that's good. So this whole idea that they're actually coming up with some solution is totally bogus. There is no solution. It works for some people. It doesn't work for others. Because the only thing that can work is the Vedic. Therefore, if someone wants to present themselves in a, you know, cross-gender way, then one, follow the etiquette of the gender they're following, and two, follow the etiquette of working in a group where if somebody's uncomfortable, you're supposed to be careful. Not that, oh, it's my right. You know, that's nonsense. That's self-centered. That's anamoy. That's animal. But, you know, people, but what about people, other people? So it's not about something higher, equality and all this. It's just about sense gratification and somebody's false ego. How glorious is that? And somehow or another, everything else has to step aside. So the point is then they are careful about that. Find those individuals where they feel comfortable, and then perform your service in those circles. If you say, oh no, but I'm restricted, you're restricted anyway. You know, and not only that, by changing how they identify themselves, they're restricting themselves also. Why don't they go, what is it, Andronymous, and then nobody can actually tell, you know. I say, you know, they're butch, but they got cute boots, you know. I mean, just, you know, point is that they don't do that. That's the thing, because it's all about them. I want to be this. No one's left. They bother me about this, but now they're bothering everybody else. So then how is this proper? If not bothering is good, then they shouldn't bother. And if it's a matter of, okay, you're bothered, you can bother back. Now they're bothering us. Now we can bother back. You know, it just goes back and forth. So then that just becomes us and them. So these modern, they can't find solutions. Because they actually don't know they don't know the philosophy. Because philosophy means you actually understand what's the inherent nature of something. Then only you can do. Because otherwise, they talk about all these things. It's not actually philosophy. Philosophy means it has to be based on what is the actual nature of something, the dharma of it. And then, based on that discussion, then you can go. Because that's the point. In the Vedic system, if there's a Brahmin who's acting like a Vaishya, and there's reason for that, means he can't perform his duties and all that, but he has to maintain himself, so he's done a Vaishya. That's allowed. he'll be counted as a Brahmin, but he's doing Vaishya work. So then when it comes to, let's say, Shraddha rites and stuff like that, then he won't be called for them. Because you can't deal with Brahmins like that. You have to deal with Brahmins who are doing their brahminical duties. But let's say the opportunity comes up where now he could again take up his brahminical duties, and he doesn't. The king will enforce that if he's going to continue as a Vaishya, now he has to be labeled as a Vaishya. He's recategorized. So he doesn't get the benefits of being a Brahmin. Because he's chosen willfully, you know, between brahminical lifestyle, brahminical occupation and Vaishya, and therefore now he's categorized in that way.
In the first scenario, should he pay tax? He's a Brahmin, but he's just dealing as a Vaishya in his occupation.
Technically, no. But being a Brahmin, then he should be giving. If it means he's either just maintaining himself, because if he's very brahminical, he'll just do the business how much it takes to do that. If he's doing it more, it would be because then he can use that money for spiritual projects. So the whole point that the king would take tax for, to give in charity for those things, he's already doing it. So there'd be no need. But if he's just making tons of money and not giving in charity and just leaving it up, then he should be reassigned, and then he should pay tax. Where were we?
At the end of this.
It is said that by modern medical treatment, in the middle of
It is said by modern medical treatment. That by modern medical treatment, a male can be transferred into a female and a female into a male. The body, however, has no connection with the soul. The body can be changed, either in this life or in the next. Right. So we're not discussing whether it can be done or not, or this and that, or any details like that. What we're discussing here is that the body can be changed, but the soul remains the same. That's the main point that is there. That's what we should gain from this. The body can be changed, either in this life or the next. Therefore, one who has knowledge of the soul and how the soul transmigrates from one body to another does not pay attention to the body, which is nothing but a covering dress. So, someone's interested in Krishna consciousness, we don't care what the body is, we give Krishna consciousness. But at the same time is that in practice and involving with others, there's the etiquettes and all that. That must be there. The Varnashram system doesn't go away because we're devotees. Right? Devotees are careful about following it. That's the principle. Because it's a system how so many varieties of mentalities can work together in a singular social context. Because otherwise, no other social system can do that. Right? Moderns talk about that, but actually they're very narrow, because unless you're from their same background, you don't fit into their group. Right? Unless you're exactly liberal the way they are, then you don't fit in. So they're the most narrow, actually. Right? The talk is very broad, but the actual community they can function within is extremely narrow. But there's a generic kind of flavor. It's like, you know, down on the savanna. A lot of animals are there, a lot of different packs. They all hang out because there's plenty of grass. Right? But in reality, they have nothing to do with each other. Does that make sense? Pandita Samadarshinaha, Bhagavad Gita 5:18. Such a person sees the soul, which is part and parcel of the Supreme Lord. Therefore, he is a Samadarshi, a learned person. Sugadeva Goswami continued. Sudyumna had been transformed into the best of beautiful women, who excite sexual desire, and was surrounded by other women. Upon seeing this beautiful woman loitering near his ashram, Buddha, the son of the moon, immediately desired to enjoy her. The beautiful woman also desired to accept Buddha, the son of the king of the moon, as her husband. Thus,
sorry, it was outside of that forest then?
Unless Buddha had some special thing, then it must have been, yes. Because probably they went in and then, because that was the extreme north of the forest.
Yeah, they mentioned that he was from forest.
Yes, so then he went from forest to forest. That's what it said.
But they should have been changed back.
No.
You don't change back when you leave that forest.
Wow.
Yeah, it's not like you can stand on the one side, zoop, zoop. Stand in the middle, hey.
That'll come up later, actually.
Also, it's a one time.
Yeah, yeah. It's a one shot. So in other words, don't come into the forest, right? Because because it mentioned the forest where Shiva and Parvati, then they spend their pastimes. So then she doesn't like when people come in.
It's signed.
They did. The sign is, because everybody knows, so you don't see any, no one had come into this forest since then, so they didn't know they came into the forest, but all the sages know, so they walk around. Right? Okay. Thus Buddha begot in her womb a son named Pururava. I heard from reliable sources that King Sudyumna, the son of Manu, having thus achieved femininity, remembered his familiar spiritual master, Vasishta. 34-36, okay. Verses 37-42, Sudyumna accepts Vanaprast. Sukadeva Goswami continued, upon seeing Sudyumna's deplorable condition, Vasishta was very much aggrieved. Desiring for Sudyumna to regain his maleness, Vasishta again began to worship Lord Shankarsana, Shiva. O King Parikit, Lord Shiva was pleased with Vasishta. Therefore, to satisfy him and to keep his own word to Parvati, Lord Shiva said to that saintly person, your disciple Sudyumna may remain a male for 1 month and a female for the next. In this way, he may rule the world as he likes. Yes?
Why would Vasishta be displeased? Being a Brahmana, why would he be attached to what happens to his disciple?
Because that he was Ila before, and his father had asked that he be made into a son so that he could rule the kingdom. And so now if he's a female, then how he'll do that?
Just that same.
Yeah.
Buddha will rule the kingdom.
Well, actually, Pururava will rule the kingdom.
Whoever.
Yes, the girl.
He again disrupted this whole thing with Sista. Finally, this Sudyumna was settled into female, and now...
Yes. Srila Prabhupada comments in verse 39. The word Gotaraja is significant in this connection. Brahmanas generally act as spiritual masters of two dynasties. One is their disciplic succession, and the other is the dynasty born of the Sema. Both descendants belong to the same Gotra, or dynasty. In the Vedic system, we sometimes find that both Brahmanas and Kshatriyas and even Vaishyas come in the disciplic succession of the same Rishis, because the Gotra and dynasties are one. There is no difference between the disciples and the family born of the seven. The same system still prevails in India today, Indian society, especially in regard to marriage, for which the Gotra is calculated. Here the word Gotraja refers to those born in the same dynasty, whether they be disciples or members of the family. Sukadeva Goswami continued. Because technically then he's also, from Gotraja, then he's in a different Gotra. Because if he's connected with Buddha, then he's in Buddha's Gotra. Because the girl accepts the boy's Gotra. So then he won't actually be in Vasishta's Gotra anymore. Sukadeva Goswami continued. Thus being favored by the spiritual master, according to the words of Lord Shiva, Sudyumna regained his desired maleness every alternative month, and in this way ruled the kingdom. So it appears he desired also. Although the citizens were not satisfied with this.
And Buddha. And Buddha.
O king, Sudyumna had three very pious sons named Utkala, Gaya, and Vimala, who became the kings of the Dakshinapata. Thereafter, when the time was ripe, when Sudyumna, the king of the world, was sufficiently old, he delivered the entire kingdom to his son, Pururava, and entered the forest. 40-42.
What? He had three sons, Utkal, Gaya, and Vimala. Where is this Pururava?
That was Buddha's son. Didn't you ask? You just asked about Buddha.
I did. I said they were married and had common sons.
But he's married to the when he's a woman. When he's a man, then he has his wife.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so I'm saying I know. We're thinking we're getting really wild nowadays. Think about this. Right? You know, there's always that cliche about, you know, the guy has two families, you know, like that. So, you know.
Wow.
Hmm? Yeah. So, he was the oldest son.
Prabhupada and Abhyaya Prakash mentioned that how that's how Sun Dynasty and Moon Dynasty.
Oh, become. Okay, yes, that's how it became. Because Puruva, his father is of the Sun Dynasty, but at the same time, his father is of the Moon Dynasty.
There's no matter that.
Yes. Yeah, well, I mean, technically, the mother would just be whoever is there, so the mother would have to be Moon Dynasty there. But then, when his mother is a father, then he's Sun Dynasty. When his mother is a mother, then he's Moon Dynasty. Yeah, so it says, so that's the thing. You bend your head around this, then the modern stuff is pretty. How do you call it? Vanilla, you know, like that. So. Oh, okay. He was saying that it'll switch where it'll go down through Moon Dynasty all the way up to Krishna. Conclusion: the body is just like a dress. This is because Sujumna and his associates were all male, which means that their souls were covered by male dress. But now they became female, which means that the dress was changed. But Sujumna and his associates' bodies were changed in the same life. That wouldn't be the doubt?
Yes.
But it says, yeah, through the heart. It is said that by modern medical treatment, a male can be transferred into a female and a female into a male. The soul, however, remains the same. The body, however, has no connection with the soul. The body can be changed either in this life or the next. Being favored by the spiritual master, according to the words of Lord Shiva, Sujumna regained his desired maleness every alternate month. In this way, he ruled the kingdom. Therefore, one who has knowledge of the soul and how the soul transmigrates from one body to another does not pay attention to the body, which is nothing but a covering dress. Pandita Samadarshina. Such a person sees the soul, which is part and parcel of the Supreme Lord. What's the difference between Nigamana and Siddhanta?
Nigamana and Siddhanta?
Yeah. The same, no? Yeah, because that would be the doubt. The next one would be the Udaharana. Because that's giving a reason. Okay, so we understand is that the body can change, the soul doesn't. So that's the point. The body's just like a dress. That's the most important thing to understand. Because then we can understand that we as the soul will be engaged in Krishna's service. It's not about the body. The body is simply the tool that we use to engage in Krishna's service. So yes, it is considered, but it's only considered in relationship to what's pleasing to Krishna. So it doesn't have more importance than what is given given to its use in Krishna consciousness. Right? It doesn't take, in other words, it doesn't become the identity that then controls Krishna consciousness. No, Krishna consciousness is there, and then within that, what is the body, that performs the identity with which then we engage in the service. Does that make sense? So in other words, devotional service modifies the identity, not the other way around. Right? Chapter 2, the dynasties of the sons of Manu. Pratigya, qualities determines one's varna and not birth. Because birth is not at all important, darshtas converted themselves to brahmanas, although born as kshatriyas. The qualities of one group are found in the men of another. Those men should be recognized by their qualities, by their symptoms, not by the caste of the family in which they are born. Hence, it is one's qualities that are stressed in all Vedic literature. Right, so now we're bringing out these aspects, because if we're actually going to get into the pure devotional service, then one is we've shown how it all engages, but the point is it's not about the bodily position. Right? We're accepting, okay, the application, but we have to be able to accept the principles that it's based on what you do. What are the actual symptoms and qualities manifest? That's what determines one's position. Right? That's why it's very dangerous to then identify that, oh, we're Westerners. Right? No, we're devotees. We happen to have these kind of qualifications, so we engage those in the Lord's service. But if the identity is as Westerners, then where does that put yourself? That puts you below the Varnashram system. So it's not that, oh, we could follow Varnashram, but it's archaic, we don't. No, Varnashram is above us, we're unqualified to follow it. Understand? It has to understand the approaches here. So we're trying to get that it's not about the birth, it's not about anything, but it's about what qualifications are there. Yes. Sorry? Issues are always on the bodily platform. They have to be, because they're pranamoy. There are no issues on the higher platforms. There's discussions about how to interpret and understand, but it's not an ism based on people's feelings. Right? It's what's the Shastric interpretation. Therefore, from manamoy starts philosophy. Below that, there's no philosophy. Right? People make philosophies out of no philosophy. You know what I'm saying? You know, it's like a... What's his name? Yeah, I can't remember his name. But, The guy, he's in jail.
Oh.
He's a serial killer. A little bit more refined. So, basically, I'm sure they have a philosophy. You know, but it's not actually a philosophy because it's not based on Dharma. It's just what aspects they like and all, what they've observed, what means something to them, and then they apply it. So technically it's not philosophy. Philosophy starts with acceptance of Dharma, which means Krishna made it. These are the laws. Therefore, Brahman has a nature, Kshatriya has a nature, Vaishya has a nature, Brahmacharya, all these have natures. Accepting that, therefore we follow the laws of nature governing those natures. And we aren't that body, we're the soul, but we happen to be in that position, we deal like that. Right? Just like, let's say you're standing on the train track, and the train is coming. You can sit there all day say, I'm not this body. But the train will run you over. So the whole thing is we can go on all day, we're devotees, and we're not this body, but the point is the laws of nature exist, and they apply. So, simply within that, we apply Krishna consciousness. So we're trying to, we see and hear all this kind of thing, because we've learned all the philosophy up to now, nicely, right? At least the fundaments that is there. But now we're getting into exceptions and other kind of aspects of it on applying, because we're comfortable, as we saw, we're going through the eighth canto, went very, very quickly, because, you know, it's just the standard things. And we've heard all the explanations, we've heard, seen all the examples, so we see here very nicely coming into pure devotional service. So then everything's in order, we come into devotional service. Now what happens if things aren't in order? How do you actually see the essence? Right? So that's what we're starting to see now. Is the body is not the consideration. It's the consciousness that is there when applying with that body. Does that make sense? So the consciousness is there, and that's there, then it's applied. And then the body becomes just a secondary. So here they're born as Kshatriyas, but they act as Brahmins, right? But their body can do Brahminical work, and they have the mentality, so it matches. But if either the body or the mentality doesn't match, then one can't claim, I can do this because I feel like it. Does that make sense? Yes.
But most problems in our society go because of that.
Because
we don't understand who they are.
The philosophy. Yes. Because they don't?
Don't understand who they are. Because of prestige.
Yes, because it's a matter of prestige. But the point is for Krishna, that's why all these stories are given. It doesn't matter about prestige. Like you see, Lord Brahma, is there with the Supreme Personality of Godhead. He starts to speak, but then Bali's wife comes out and you know, she takes over the scene. But it's not based on pride. It's just based on the natural affection and relationship between the husband and wife. But now if she says, it's my right and all this, at that point, that's when lightning bolts come down and you find little piles of ash. You understand? So that's the whole thing, is to get this balance, because the ability to be able to have an identity, be strong in that, and be able to fit into the system, and know we want everything of everything. That's the whole problem. And so that's called antyaja, one who acts outside the system. So actually, in one sense, devotees aren't confused. They're very well fixed in their position as antyajas and acting like that. You know, the confusion comes up, why are they even talking Varnashram in the first place? Right? But then the problem comes is that it's that same antyaja society that inspired them to take up Krishna consciousness, because they weren't satisfied before. It's not that everything was like perfect in their life and it was just getting so boring, so there's got to be something more. And that's why they came to Krishna consciousness. Right? You know, that's the, you know, as antyajas are the fifth group, so therefore, you know, you have one who wants to know knowledge, one interested in knowledge, one who wants wealth, one who's looking for, you know, emotional support or get rid of misery, and one who's bored, right? You know, these are the five categories of pious, you know, well, actually not so pious, so, but, you know. Right? Yes. So that's the whole point, is that that same society, they weren't satisfied. That's why they took up Krishna consciousness. Then to fall back into it, that now that's the perfect environment in which to do it. Now I have Krishna consciousness. Now I can make the antyaja culture perfect. Then it's not going to work. Right? Because they're diametrically opposed. One's based on sense gratification, simply the mental speculation of the mind. I feel like it. Right? So, we're giving up, I'm the controller and enjoyer. This is the fun part, right? I'm the controller, I'm the enjoyer. Okay? So, those in the, you know, prestigious positions, they are the controller, they have facility, they're the enjoyer. They identify with those two. And if you say friend of everybody, no, they don't see themselves a friend of anybody. Who would want to be friends with anybody? I can remember one devotee telling me from aristocracy that one time, he was with his mother and they bumped into some lady and then they were talking and all this and that, and it was going really well. They were hitting it off, and then while they're talking, then, you know, talked about where they're from, and when his mother found out this other person, this other lady was from a common area, not from aristocracy, then, you know, they, you know, politely, you know, went their part of their ways. And later on he asked his mother, oh, what about your friend from this place? And she just kind of looked at him very sternly and says, we have no friends from that place. You understand? So the whole point of being friends, that's just not on the table, right? And so you want to be friendly, but it's considered sentimental because it gets in the way of controlling and enjoying, right? So then the other party, then they see all the evils in controlling and enjoying. So then what do? Try to make it nice for everybody. They become the friend of everybody. But if anybody's in control, oh, that's bad. Or if anybody's enjoying and everybody's not enjoying, that's bad. So even though it's claiming this will make everybody happy, there is no control or no enjoyment. How are they going to be happy? You came here for that. Right? We didn't fall down from the spiritual world because we wanted to be everybody's friend. So, we're in the material world and we don't even get what we came here for. Right? So, that's not working out. You know, so, therefore, being friend of everybody, but that's friend of anybody who's not controlling and enjoying. If you're controlling and enjoying, then you're not the friend. It doesn't apply for you. You understand? So, all it is these three kinds of aspects of material consciousness, that I'm the controller and enjoyer and friend. These are just the different political parties. Social parties. And so then they think, each one thinks that they're, you know, one successful and one is not. One's really nice and the other one, if you're part of the group, they're really nice, and if you're not, then they're less nice. Like that. But only, that's why it's only the devotee can work in all groups. And we're saying, no, we'll switch from the one. Okay, devotees are that, it's really hard. We'll switch to the friend. And that will make it universal. It doesn't make it universal at all. It's just another political platform, that's all. So the only thing that can do that is devotional service, based on Vedanta, based on the Shastra. That's universal, because that then has for everybody. That will work. So when we can adjust with that, and therefore whatever position one's in, we will deal with them accordingly, and then bring them forward in Krishna consciousness is the primary aspect, and secondary you adjust as it's able to be adjusted. But this idea, no, we'll just leave the secondary alone and there's no need to adjust, that's wrong. Yes, today maybe there's not, but tomorrow, then as they advance, they may find aspects are not valuable. So it has to be adjusted. Right, because it's about what's favorable for Krishna consciousness and rejecting what's unfavorable, rather than, no, my modern philosophy, that's what's favorable, and anything against that is unfavorable. That's not devotional service. It's just not. Right. Does that make sense? So, okay. So stop here. Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Jai Srila Prabhupada ki, Samaveta Bhaktivinoda ki, Jai Nitai Gaura.